The Future of Teamwork is a Leader production. Subscribe today and never miss an episode.
What do you think happens when you're not around? You must lead those teams, not for the moment or not through you as the leader, but they need to be operating at their apex best at all times when you're gone.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name's Dame Gruneveld, and today I'm here with Tony Thielen. Tony has some cool titles behind him after 35 years with John Deere, doing some really cool work, including in my hometown, Australia, Brisbane, Australia. Tony's founded The River, and he's executive coach there. Also an author of a new book, Things We Desire, and there's a great story attached to a poem that's been a central pillar in Tony's life there. So it's going to be a wonderful conversation. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Awesome. Great to be with you today, Dane. Look forward to it, man.
Yeah, you bet. I feel guilty because you know where my hometown is, but I don't know where your hometown is. So I've got to do some catch up on geography here.
Yeah, no worries. Western Iowa, middle of the corn belt, and just a rural kid trying to do good in the world.
That's awesome. Well, pre-show, the conversation's been really energizing for me. So maybe you can bring us all up to speed on like what's brought you to this moment. How have you come to find this energy and this inspiration around the book and the executive coaching?
Yeah, right on. I had a long career, and I was very fortunate to have some great experiences with John Deere, and it brought me around the world and in touch with some great leaders. But one thing I picked up on in the latter part of my career was the company provided me access to an executive coach. And this individual didn't just help me succeed at work. This individual helped me take a look at my life, helped me sort through what was important, helped me get ahead of things and kind of control with intention how I spent my time, how I created energy, what I did in not only the professional world, but the personal world. And as I neared my retirement date in 2023, I just started thinking with more intention, you know, what's the best way for me to put fingerprints on this world and, you know, make a difference? How can I pour into other people like so many people poured into my life throughout my career and my life? And I thought, you know, I'm just going to do it. And The River was just a natural name. I spent a lot of time fishing, and I spent a lot of time walking up and down rivers, and life is kind of like a river. You don't know, you know, what's around the bend, and it could be a rapids. It could be barely a trickle. It could be a flood. It could be, you know, a drought. You just don't know where life is going to take us. And when I got to that point of retiring, I just started talking to people, and one by one, they came out of the woodwork, and it's been a great ride the last couple of years. And I think I've really, really, truly found my calling.
That's wonderful. I know retirement can be such a, particularly after 35 years with a great company and a lot of different adventures, it can be quite a shift in like identity structure and meaning for people. Did you have a vision pre-retirement that this was a direction, or did it sort of emerge in that moment that came after?
In the 5 years prior to 2023, there were some crystallizing events, let's say. For sure, one of them was COVID, when you did get a chance to look in the mirror and, you know, evaluate your own mortality a little bit more closely, as you didn't know what the impact of that virus was around the world. Mm-hmm. And you get a little bit more serious about, you know, what is your impact on the world? If you had more time, what would you do with it? And a combination of that kind of introspection, along with a conversation with the company around, you know, what does my succession plan look like? And it began with a 5-year career leading up to various positions, and just maintained that conversation over 5 years. And the last year I finally said, yeah, I think I'm going to retire on this date, and let's work towards a succession plan. And a lot of factors went into it, but I was grateful for the opportunity, and I retired young, so 55, you know, and started the company when I was 20. But retirement is more an assignment of my relationship to John Deere. It's not an assignment to my life.
Yes.
You know, so I had to label it something when I left that company. So it's the natural transition of retirement and giving the job to somebody else and acclimating them and making sure the handoff is good and leaving on good terms and all that kind of stuff. But my life was trying to find more ways to give value over time and in ways that don't have an end date. So that's kind of where I'm at today.
That's neat. That's really neat. I've had a slightly different experience with it. I was fortunate to sell a business that I was a key leader in originally, the CEO, and moved out over time earlier this year. So I didn't have the 5 years of planning. We kind of always knew that we may sell one day, but then all of a sudden it's upon you and you're like, ooh, we kind of threw that. but there's some interesting similarities around thinking about, you know, that introspection and how do I want to be more intentional with life. I love how you shared both the personal and the professional. So I found a lot of value in coaching in that point in time and trying to get some of those perspectives. So that there's a lot there, I think, for people that are going through transitions. And it's awesome when you can have someone who's come through one of those transitions before to kind of journey with you as well, because I think we're living in a busy world where more and more people are going to be shifting. I like your assignment of, you know, the end of that chapter, but not the end of my work.
Yeah. And it's actually evolved in the last 2.5 years from kind of have a plan. Okay. Let's have a plan with intention and then personal and professional. To maybe kind of four quadrants today is, and I work with people a lot on this. And if you could divide our screen up into four, you know, the upper left would be professional. Like what do you do for a living? The upper right is like your community. Like how do you relate to people in the outside world? And then the lower left is people you love. I mean, like family, you know, your mom and dad, you maybe the family you came from, maybe the family that you're involved in. And then in the lower right is self, like the self, like you, the being and what you are becoming. And there's at least four. I mean, there could be some other domains in life, but those have been the four most helpful to work with people that are struggling to find fulfillment in their professional lives. And I deal with a lot of, owners of the company, CEOs or senior officers of firms, and they're all dedicated a lot to the upper left, like the professional life. And then what remains, you know, after this is taken care of, then they fill in down here. And that's not the, I try to slow them down a little bit to try to reassign the value of their time to make sure that they're capturing the moments that matter in their life along the journey, not wait for the end. And the one that gets, you know, the least amount of attention is they really don't really take a look at themselves that much. And just we gotta take care of ourselves first. And then all the energy can flow to the rest of the world.
Yeah. That oxygen mask analogy is a real one. And it's interesting in this world, and I'm sure you've seen it from your, professional career with John Deere and into this coaching sphere. So many of us attached our value and our sense of worth to how we were doing, you know, not how we were being. So it was like, what sales did we make this quarter? What company did we grow? Which customers did we win? What products did we develop? And often that focus can kind of hollow out the energy and the opportunity for ourselves as leaders, but also for our team members in sort of making sure that they're in a healthy environment too.
Well, the human experience is much more than transactional in nature. It's a creative over time. And your term hollowed out is a good one, because the human experience every day is such a rich experience, and you just have to be there with the right energy and with the right intention. to make sure and enjoy the journey, but also, you know, find success and fulfillment.
Yeah, it was interesting. I had a really close friend and colleague, because I've been running this podcast for a few years now, and I always espouse and get excited when I talk to people like you, Tony, who are really spreading good work and good thought practices and good teaming practices. And she said to me, maybe now's the time for you to go and practice some of that stuff you talk about on your podcast. And just called me out right then and there. She's like, you got four kids, you know, talking about being intentional with your time, going back to your box, like a little bit more time with love, people, and self, and a little less time with professional and community.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, and everybody gets busy, and it's just the way the world turns. You get busy, but you get wiser the older you get. And it's wise to tap into the experience of others instead of having to experience it all yourself. Hence the value of mentors, hence the value of reading books, listening to podcasts, you know, listening to your parents, you know, people that have gone through experiences. So you don't have to go through everything to learn something. And if there's an accelerant in this world to leading a good life and a fulfilled life successfully, it's use other people's experience wisely and you'll do just fine.
I love that. I'm just going to double click on that. You don't have to go through everything to learn something. So many of us get stuck in the, we have to put our hands on the hot stove to learn moment, and that comes at a cost. So I think, you know, leaning into story to connection to other people is absolutely a way to do it. And interestingly, as humans, you know, emotionally, we're all wired differently. But if you can somehow position yourself emotionally in the story of that other person's learning, I've often found that it can land a little bit better. But it takes a certain mindset to be open to hearing them and processing it.
Yeah. What do they say? The old Kung Fu, when the student is ready, the teacher will emerge, or the teacher will appear.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that one a lot. I like that one a lot. In your work, you know, whether it was the end of your time there at John Deere or more recently in the coaching, how much are you seeing that hollowing out or burnout or whatever we might call it impacting leaders and their ability to perform as leaders and as, you know, as team members in some of these senior roles?
Oh, it's a pretty serious concern. Most of my clients really don't have anybody else to talk to. And the one personal and confidential conversation they have is with me. And that's where the concerns come out. That's where the regrets come out. That's where the worries come out. And that's where the stress and the burnout, you know, sometimes it's real, sometimes it's perceived. And that's where the conversation, you know, that you're starting to get into the edges of true value when you get to that point. But they're always under immense pressure to stand and deliver and lead a team, lead a company, lead an initiative, any kind of a change. And there's always pressure. There's always pressure, but maybe most of the pressure comes from within. They've got a sense of high standards, or they've set some bars that they believe that they need to perform at. And some other times it's coming from a board of directors or from some external entity, but yeah. The stress is real. The burnout is real. And the pressure to deliver is across the board, right? And I've got people in government. I've got startups. I've got Fortune 50 companies that I work with. And there's always a constant demand on their time, demand on their ability to deliver, and a constant pressure amongst at least those four quadrants we talked about before. Yeah. There could be a few others, but those are the primaries.
It's interesting. There's a couple of leaders right now that I've been paying a lot of attention to. One of them is Bob Chapman over at Barry Waymiller, who talks a lot about care for employees and span of care, which I find fascinating. And then the other is Gary Ridge from WD-40, who is the CEO and chairman there, and as I said, chairman emeritus now. And in both of those cases, they speak to creating healthy conditions for their employees so that they can go home happy and that they can feel fulfilled. And I see in your kind of tagline there on LinkedIn, it's about alleviating pain, anxiety, stress so that leaders can have a successful career and a fulfilling life. There's something there between, you know, your area of work, what these two gentlemen have been doing that suggests that if you get it right with the leader, then the rest of the team gets the lift as well. And I'd be intrigued to kind of get your read on that. Is that what you see in practice? How does it tend to flow beyond the individual leader into the connections that they'd have more broadly
in
work?
So this is a big topic, and I'm glad you brought it up the way you did. Leaders need to invest in their environment and in their people and in their teams in very tangible ways. Like give them the trust to get the job done, and then don't go micromanage and check on them. You know, one of the truth telling questions that I ask clients all the time is, what do you think happens when you're not around? And it's just kind of a thoughtful thought experiment with them. But my point is, you must lead those teams, not for the moment, not for when you're around, or not through you as the leader, but they need to be operating at their apex best at all times when you're gone. And are they aligned with the mission? Are they aligned with the strategy of the firm? Are they aligned with the spirit of the team that they're on? And that leader needs to build that kind of an environment. And that makes them think a little bit differently about how they talk to their staff, how they talk to their employees. And you have to, people say it a lot, you have to have trust. But how you develop that trust is what makes a difference in my mind.
There's actually been a lot on trust recently. One, Gary Rich, I mentioned there at WD-40, he had a hierarchical structure of values. And he said, I want you all to go out and make decisions based on the values so that you can trust yourself to make a decision if you're clear on the values. And he also shifted the manager title across the organization to coach. So he created less of the traditional think, tell, do hierarchy and more of the coach, let's process together and use the values as a kind of rubric, maybe. That's how I perceived his work. So it's fascinating that it's not the traditional top-down methodology of building and running businesses, but it's emerging as a much more human way to operate in today's world.
Yeah, the last couple of years of my career, I changed my monthly one-on-ones, you know, from, you know, a read down of update on projects, any money being spent, any people changes, any bad news early. I had this list, you know, of stuff. Come prepared, get in sync, let's go. The last 2 years, I had, how can I help you do your job?
Yeah.
If we don't need to meet, you can cancel with no adverse reaction.
Yeah.
And, you know, about half of them canceled because they were busy doing other things than having to prepare for the boss, you know, a bunch of laundry list things. And I thought those things were really important. And I, in a way, I'm like, that's the essence of business so that we move it forward. What was really happening was they were moving it forward. They were doing all that stuff. I just was getting in the way to make me look sharp and make me look better and keep me up to date. The reality is they just needed to go do their jobs. And if I could help them do it, they needed an open avenue to me to make sure that I could be there to sing their praises or to give them the resources and support or just talk through anything that they were dealing with. But that flip, the trust meter went really high the last 2 years on my staff. That was a good step.
I love that. Because I saw a podcast the other day with Brené Brown talking about trust. I think she's talking to Stephen Bartlett on Diary of a CEO, and she was talking about putting marbles in the jar. It's what you give. It's how you show up for someone else that builds the trust. And often leaders, I think, fall foul of, well, let's wait until you show me that you've done the work that I'll trust you. It's actually, you've got to give it first to get it back. And I think your example is a brilliant one, Tony, of, hey, I'm here to coach you and I'll trust you that if you don't need the one-to-one, you just go, you make use of your time and I'm here when you need me. I think that's, there's something more than symbolic there. It's a real fundamental trust builder.
Yeah, that wasn't just adjusting one meeting a month for those folks. That was a deposit into the relationship bank account. And it was a good deposit. I should have done it a lot sooner.
Yeah, no, me too, now that we talk about it. Interestingly, for those people out there that are thinking about that shift, there's always a fear of, hey, if I do this, what happens if someone goes too far down the wrong avenue solving a problem without me? What if they take the autonomy? My old man always says there's a fine line between delegation and abdication of responsibility. So, like, is there a way that a leader should be checking in if they've created a bit more of that trust and freedom when it's not in a structured kind of readout or one-to-one or monthly metrics report?
Well, there has to be a connection to the objectives of the firm, the strategy of the department, the norms of doing business in the company, how you treat one another, the values and stuff like that, you know. And as long as the person is aiming with the spirit of those intents, and they do so with integrity and that kind of a thing, I would rather rein somebody in, you know, for taking too many liberties than having to encourage them to do some things. And, you know, in that you have to trust that they're going to do the right things. You just, in 80, 90% of the time, it's absolutely what you would have done in their role, you know. But then there's these other times, well, geez, I wouldn't have done that way. Or, geez, I would have made a different decision. But again, you know, you mentioned it earlier, we're all wired a little differently. And maybe my approach is a little different than your approach. That doesn't make it wrong. It just makes it different.
Yes.
And you know, you know what they're trying to achieve. You've talked about what the outcomes are. You don't have to be involved in the how, just the outcomes and the direction that we're going. We don't want to argue about that, but let's just get out of the way on the how and let people run as fast as they can. Yep. And like the reorientation of my meetings, how can I help you achieve whatever you're after?
I think that's phenomenal. That freedom on the how, you know, is probably the best definition of avoiding micromanagement. Set the boundary conditions. Here are the objectives, norms, values, tools. And then once the boundary conditions are there, let them operate as they need to. I think I've read actually, I just think that when you have a team member who's given the boundary conditions and told the exact path to take through the box, it actually can lead to, you know, the manifestation of depression because that person isn't able to be their human self. They're just kind of becoming robotic and following a task list, and they can't really exert any of their brilliance on the work, which, you know, is a lot of the time that we spend in our waking hours.
Yeah, you don't want to give a really smart person with some great experience in life an objective and then tell them exactly how to get there and then check in every week. That's a great formula for eroding trust. And they'll be gone in 2 years or less. They'll be in a different environment. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight, but typically people that are treated that way with skills and with ambition and with intelligence, they want to go somewhere to grow. They want to master something and really challenge themselves. And if you're going to not put them in that environment, you're not going to have A players on your team eventually. You might for a while, but eventually the A players will migrate.
Yeah, no, I believe that. No, that's super neat. Well, I'm glad you shared that story, Tony. There's one more point that I wanted to come back to from your quadrant, and then I want to dive into the book a little bit more and hear a bit more of that implication or the reinforcement of your story. You said when you're working with executive leaders on those four quadrants, so professional, community, the people you love, and self, often you need to help them slow down and reassign the value of their time. I found that quite profound because everyone, or so many people today, are always time poor. I'm busy. And a lot of people are often, myself included, trying to kind of get the most leverage out of each minute of their day because they feel time poor. So how do you approach that with a leader? How do you get that slowing down of time and that reallocation of value?
It's actually a function of two variables. You mentioned one of time, but it's also one of energy. And I back them up, and they have more time than what they think. And it's not a badge of honor to go around saying you're busy all the time and then just create busy work for yourself.
Yeah.
And at the level that I coach at, they have a lot of discretion in how they use their time. They're often at the top of the company or very close to the top of the company with a lot of autonomy. And they can pick and choose. And the first step is just an hour of power. I mean, just find a time in the day to give an hour of power to yourself. If it's meditation for an hour, great. If it's sit there and plan and look at everything else you're going to do and just soak in and plan ahead, okay, fine. But give yourself time to think. You know, in my schedule, I'd have Tony time, you know. Yeah. You've got to find a time that is sacred to you and then go slay the dragon, you know, take on the world, do whatever you need to do. And then secondly, it's not a function of just allocating time. A person with the right amount of energy can get done in an hour what some people can't do in 4 hours.
Yeah.
It's the time plus the energy. So you don't want to give your most fruitful hours only to the upper left quadrant and then come drained and you can't have a conversation with your 2-year-old or 5-year-old, or you don't have the energy to go to the volleyball match at the night, you know, and have a conversation with fellow parents or your child or your friends, you know.
Yeah.
So you gotta watch the energy spread across those quadrants, and you have to, with intention, be smart about how you plan your time ahead. That's where we start and start to a little bit diffuse the macro focus in the upper left quadrant, which is professional life, which is so dominant. We just kind of get there through momentum because of many, many reasons. We just get there. But the reality is, if you want the success and the fulfillment, you got to start thinking differently. And I help them think differently.
I love that. And I love these two words together, success and fulfillment. I know there's a few different books out there that talk about the power of no or the power of taking away. And it sounds like that's something of what you're creating in order to bring the right time and energy to the table, starting outside of that top left quadrant. But then no doubt it circles back. It becomes somewhat like a multiplier effect if you all of a sudden are experiencing, at least as I'm hearing it from you, Tony, if you're experiencing more energy and connection with the people you love, with your community, with yourself, then when you do show up at work, you get that 4X output. You pick the right task, you have a better conversation, you make a better decision that's not fear-based, perhaps.
And you're doing everything in concert with each other. It's not a trade-off to some pending liability somewhere else. The best is Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Who's it?
The character Rat was given that guy dating advice in the mall. Wherever you're at, that's where it's at, you know. Yeah. Was his advice. And you know, wherever you're at, that's where it's at. And yeah, if you're at work, you've got to, you know, take a call from your child at school or your wife, you know, there's fluidity to it. But for the most part, be present. My colleagues from my first book, a couple of professors at Drake University here in Iowa, have a saying, be where your feet are.
Yes.
And that's such a rich encapsulation. Just remember that. Just be where your feet are, man, and you'll be fine.
It's funny because here in the U.S. with ice hockey, everyone's kind of latched onto, I think it was Gretzky who said, like, be where the puck's going to be.
Yeah.
But that's a disaster. Like, might work in ice hockey, but in real life, you're going to be just dying from FOMO. You're running around constantly thinking, gee, where's the puck going to be? And AI's only made that worse.
Well, in strategy speak, I get it, that there is a place for strategic thinking and, assembling multiple different various outcomes in the future and selecting a course of action and things like that. But for living a daily life with meaning and relationships in the human experience, you don't want your head floating, out there on the ice somewhere. You want to be right where you're at, man, every day.
That's interesting. And I like the way you tied the be where the puck's at to strategy, because I think, and maybe this is true for small business owners, it was definitely true for me. At times when I paused and I was really honest with myself, I would explain to the team, all right, I'm the chief distraction officer. And as I think about it, I think it was because I wasn't creating a clear delineation between this is strategy time and this is execution. And so if you're constantly executing and looking for adjustments to strategy, you can kind of be a little bit all over the place. Well, that was certainly my lived experience. So there's something here around rhythm that just speaks to me for leaders and for teams, knowing when they're doing the strategy work, the innovation, the disruption, and when they're operating, and they should be giving each other room to just get it done.
Yeah, there's a time to deliberate, and then there's a time we've decided, and there's a line of demarcation.
Yeah,
it's time to go. We're not arguing about where we're going anymore. We're going, and that's execution mode. And of course, the role that you had, the luxury is you may have to pivot again in the future somewhere. The journey of the traditional entrepreneur is never linear or straightforward. It's the fuzzy front end or whatever they call it, of the innovation cycles. It's just difficult to navigate that stuff, but when you've got a team to lead, it's a dance. You want to manage that dance a little bit with the music around when it's time to create and when it's time to you scale things or you execute on things. It's not fomenting ideas and exploring micro investments. Let's go. We got it. It's going to win. Let's go.
Yeah, because I think I love your choice of the word micro investments there, Tony, too. And you operated in a much larger organization than I did. But I think a lot of us, particularly with this advent of AI, we're all getting a little bit enamored with pilot projects. But the problem with pilot projects is if you're launching 50 to 100 a year, then no one in the organization really has that lockdown focus on, operating rhythm, norms, values. There's always a bit of like fear, confusion, or why is that team doing that differently all of a sudden? So I think we might be creating a little bit more chaos in today's digital transformation world.
There's definitely a process to explore there. I used to have a visual representation of that with like 50 small arrows on the left side of the page. And then it, like a venturi, it kind of comes down to a bottleneck and then it opens up, and the arrows were either red or green, and a lot more red ones than green ones. But somebody has to pick which are the green and which are the red, which are the ones that you're going to scale and make big arrows on the right side of the page. And you have to have a process to evaluate, you have to have some outcomes you're trying to create, but you got to figure out, is it the technology? Is it ready? Is it the customer use case? Is it the process of maturity, whatever? What's the mix that works? But when you find one, it's got to leap over and become a big green arrow. You're going to scale it. You're going to take it to the performance engine, take it away from the innovation engine and give it to the performance engine. That's the way we used to talk about it.
And of course, at John Deere, it had to be big and green, the arrow.
Exactly. Yeah, big green arrows, big green tractors, big green arrows.
I love that. No, that's neat. Well, thank you for sharing that framing. Let's come back to the book, Tony. So Things We Desire, and you told me it's about the poem, The Desiderata, turns 100 years old, you suggested on the book cover there.
Yeah, that's it. Here's the book, Things We Desire, The Desiderata Turns 100. It was originally written in 1927, and it was an extremely popular poem in the 60s and 70s. It inspired Oprah Winfrey, Morgan Freeman, Carl Sagan. It got put into a lot of people's homes in the 60s and 70s. And in my case, my older sister had an art assignment in her high school art class to use her calligraphy skills to some good end. And she made a very elegant copy of the Desiderata that hung in my bedroom all through my high school years. And that poem helped inspire me through college, get a job, get married, have three kids, raise three wonderful daughters, and then a whole career. And the poem recently came back to me, and I decided to reintroduce it to the world. I started asking people around town, have you ever heard of the Desiderata? And 80% had not. So I knew I was onto something, and I knew I really wanted to introduce it to the world at that point. And I really break down the poem into 30 values, like peace, calmness, love, all kinds of values that are present in a good, meaningful life. And then I explain a little bit about that value, make it a little more personal. And then I give 5 things you can do that day to bring more of that value into your life. And then each chapter at the back end has a little bit of space to write in, like what's going on in your life right now. So each book is kind of like a personal journal. A little thing, every book I've ever written, I always write in the margins. I'm always underlining stuff. So I like to make a little room for people to write their thoughts, you know. And you know what? If somebody's in college right now, read the book and then come back at it after you have a family, and the answers are going to be different. Your response is going to be different. You have changed, you know, and it's that kind of a book. And I hope people like it. It's been out there on Amazon, all the global Amazon sites since the 3rd of November. Right. And, it's been getting some pretty good reviews. So I'm very happy with the launch, and I have a great launch team, by the way. It's been a fun project, so I hope people like it.
That's wonderful. I'll look forward to diving into that. I've been doing a lot of Ryan Holiday's work around the Daily Stoic Journal, and I find that even though it's the same questions for the same date each year, that coming back through, like, life is changing, and you continue to grow in your sort of wisdom and appreciation of some of these themes.
Yeah, Ryan Holiday. Yeah, what stands in the way becomes the way, man. Here we go. The other thing, man cannot step into the same river twice, because the river changes, and he's not the same man either. Yeah. So you can't repeat that action. That's a very good analogy for us as humans thinking about the human experience. We all change over time.
I love that one, and that's been brought up by a few guests, and it has a huge amount of relevance, not just in the personal sphere, but all in the professional sphere, because often you'll see someone that you may have worked with on a project 6 months ago or 6 years ago, or maybe at a different company, and you constantly think of them as who they were then, and you're not thinking about what they've learned and what's changed for them in life in that intervening period, nor have you thought about how the work's changed. There's something very powerful, and it ties into a theme that I've been really focusing a lot lately on, Tony, which is uncertainty. Like, if we embrace uncertainty for a little bit longer, if we just expand that space between question and answer, which we're all so rapidly running around trying to solve for, then it can create a very different connection. It create very different perspectives and insights on like what are we facing here and how might we tackle it, particularly in a work setting.
You know, you just reminded me of an extremely powerful formula that I use quite often, not only with my clients, but myself and also with my kids. An event does not equal the outcome. The event plus the response equals the outcome. And you have to pause. You have to pause after an event happens. And then, and only then, when you attach your response to it, can you dictate what the outcome is going to be. And in that response is your agency as a human being. That's what makes life life. That response, the event doesn't make life life. Events happen all the time. But our response, our agency, you know, you have to pause there. Just like you said, just expand out between the question and the answer a little bit.
Yeah.
Just expand out the things that happen to you in your business and in your life between an event that happens to you, which might be very, very bad initially. Leave room for a different response and it might create a different outcome. But you have to, pause there. That's awesome. That's such a great insight that you brought up.
Right, thank you. And that I'm definitely going to use that equation. I love equations. I was always okay at math, but I find them an easy way to remember things and to explain them to people too. Well, Tony, it's been an awesome conversation. We've covered quite a wide array of topics from, you know, your personal experience with coaches and wanting to kind of pay that forwards in your work, how you approach the four quadrants. I find that really helpful. There's so many different methods and models out there, but the four quadrants is very straightforward to me. So professional, community, the people you love, and self. The story you shared on shifting your one-to-one model and creating more trust, giving more sort of agency to the team. But the importance of, as you underlined, having the norms, the values, the business objectives there. And I love how we kind of shifted into that focus on time and energy. They're so big. So your hour of power, I think, is super helpful. And just thinking about bringing the right energy to the right moments, not just at work. So there's so many elements here, including this formula that we've wrapped up on that are really strong. So if there's leaders out there, if there's board members that need help with a leader in one of their companies, how do they best find you, find the book, and kind of take some of this inspiration and practical wisdom forward?
Yeah, I've got all kinds of free stuff on my website, therivercoach.org, O-R-G. And for sure, I don't track emails. If people want material on my website, I don't make you give me your email or anything. I just give it to you. So lots of free things that are written in ways to help people go through events in life is out there today. But for sure, if anybody wants to reach out to me, it's tony@therivercoach.org. Just tony@therivercoach.org. And I'd be happy to have a conversation if I can help somebody in their journey. For sure, reach out. And of course, also the book is available on Amazon and stuff like that all over the place. But I would like to hear from people if they have questions or if they want to have a conversation about a difficult time that they're going through. That's where I think I can add the most value. And I think that's where my fingerprints are left in this earth as I think about the road ahead for me.
That's neat, Tony. I'll definitely grab the book and hopefully I'll get to know where your hometown is one day. We'll go do some fishing in the river too.
That sounds good. That would be great.
Been a pleasure. Thanks for making the time today.
Just a quick note before we go. The views and opinions shared in this episode are those of our guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, Dane Gruneveld, the Leader Group, our patron Huddle 3, or our partners and affiliates. Any scenarios discussed are for the purpose of fueling creative thinking and conversation and should be viewed only in this context. Dane, Leader, our sponsors, partners, and affiliates do not endorse any guest or any organization they may be associated with.
It's important to remember that every workplace is as individual as the people within it. Our recommendation is to always seek solutions that are specifically designed to help serve your team's unique needs. And to this point, please know we're here, ready to help you find the best way forward, no matter where your starting point is. You can connect with Dane or myself, Alicia McCraw, on LinkedIn or via the links contained in the show notes. Thanks again for tuning in. And hey, if you think someone in your network would benefit from this episode, feel free to share it or give us a 5-star rating. Those 5 little stars really help us reach more curious people like you. We'll catch you next time on the Future of Teamwork.